A smokehouse like this holds about 500 pounds of meat, and the smoke comes from burning specially ordered apple and cherry wood. The last time I saw that much sausage hanging was in the locker room at the New York Athletic Club.
Hey everybody, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. Again, sorry for the delay, this stuff happens. Life is incredibly crazy for me right now. Personally, professionally, the whole thing. It is nuts. So we take it one day at a time, you know. Everything will work out in the end here. It's just so much going on, I can't keep up. So some things have to take a back seat, and unfortunately I've got to slow down and I can't get to the things I'd like to do. I mean, there are so many things I want to do, and I can't. And it sucks, and it's getting to me, so bear with me here, okay? Today, I am going to rant a lot, because I am pissed off about a lot of stuff that has to do with us. I am pissed off at foodies. In fact, I'm so pissed off, I hate the word foodie right now, because I don't like the way it sounds. I don't like the association. I think I wish there was another name for it, but there isn't. I am I'm freaking pissed that we as a culture of foodies are really turning into some sniveling pussies and weirdos. And I think that the word liberal comes to mind quite a bit. You know, the sandal wearing, tree hugging, granola eating hippie. And that's what we're becoming. And we're becoming pretentious, pompous assholes. That's what is happening right now. And I'm seeing it a lot. And I'm seeing a lot of stuff on television I don't like. I think we're not bringing enough focus to real problems that we have, like 15,000 people in Japan dying and no food and just an absolute shitstorm going on there. And what makes the news is... Hey, I don't think we should be eating sushi anymore. The fish is probably bad. That's our biggest concern, that sushi is now kind of off the menu. Seriously? That's what you're thinking about? Sushi? You're thinking about fish? You're thinking about, you know, the fact that you can't eat sushi now and you're pissed at that? Wow, dude. Fuck you. Did you bleep that? Okay, thank you. Listen, I'm not bleeping those all day. I bleeped the first one, but I'm going to let you know I'm dropping some F-bombs today. We are stupid. We are overprivileged, overfed, and stupid. Oh, Jesus. I saved this one, man. I just thought, man, maybe I won't go off. Now, fuck it. You know, this is messy. This really looks bad. There's a lot of stuff going on right now that just makes us look bad. And I hope we can get past this. I hope we can get it out of our heads and start becoming human beings again. Because I think it's pathetic. First of all, you know what I should do? I should drink. Yeah, I'm going to drink a beer. I'm going to have Stone did a collaboration with Green Flash Pizza Port called Highway 78. Because Highway 78 is the highway that goes through San Diego County, where all these breweries were from. In fact, yeah, think about this. Pizza Port is actually in the old Stone Brewing old brewery there in San Marcos. That's where it all started for them. And then Green Flash too. They did a Scotch Ale. It's 8.8% alcohol. And if you don't know what Scotch Ale is, kind of like a deep, dark, fruity malt bomb. Very nice, not overly hopped. You'd think you're going to get like really pounded by hops when you get a beer from Green Flash, Pizza Port, and Stone, because those breweries do tend to like to use a lot of hops. So I've got one here. I figured, oh, shit, let's just drink some beer. That way, if I do say anything that happens to piss you off or drive you to the point to where you don't want to listen to my show anymore after this, at least I can say, hey, I was drunk. All right? I've been drinking. That's the beer talking. But not really. Anyway, take a sip here. Not a lot of head in this thing. You don't come to expect it. No, I'm gonna sit here with this beer and just be pissed for about a half an hour, so bear with me. If you don't want to listen to me going off about stuff, yeah, go ahead, turn it off. You know, we'll call this one a wash. I'll come back and blow sunshine and rainbows up your ass the next time I'm on here. But for now, I just got to say a few things. First of all, on the same day that the news broke that Anheuser-Busch bought Goose Island Brewing for $38 million. And craft beer nerds all over the place came unglued. Like, how could they do this? How could they sell out? You know, that's not craft brewing. They're not a craft brewery. Seriously. On the same day this news happens, as I'm in Oceanside that day and I had to drive, you know, an hour home, I get home to find out that the beer I had brewed over the weekend had exploded. The top flew off. You know, I've got a little on my, I've got a carboy that I use, a glass carboy, and I've got this little nipple that fits over the top, and CO2 builds up when you're brewing beer. That's just, you know, when the yeast is eating the sugar that makes the alcohol, it builds up a lot of CO2. Well, it got nuts during the day. I don't know why. Maybe the yeast was just super happy or super functional, or maybe I put too much oxygen in the beer. I don't know. Anyway, it was a perfect storm, and it blew up. And so, you know, it blew up in my house. And at the time, because I haven't had a blow up in a while, I didn't put a towel over it or anything. I just kind of had it out there with a little sack over it to keep the light off of it. And it blew the top off. Top hit the ceiling, sprayed beer everywhere, literally on the ceiling. It sprayed beer on the walls. It sprayed beer all over the, you know, the kitchen table, all over the mail. And, of course, I didn't come home to find it so I could clean it up. Now, Katrina comes home first. She finds it. She's pissed. And rightly so. Listen. And to her credit, God bless her, she's pissed, but she doesn't yell at me. She just makes me clean it up and doesn't say anything about it. Years ago, it was an issue. Now, it's not an issue. Because she knows I, you know, that was a freak thing. That's never going to happen again. But it reminded me of why I love to brew beer. Because I love beer. And listen, we've all gone through this. I mean, anybody who brews beer has at least once, you've had an explosion. Either in your fermenter, or you've had bottle bombs, you've had bottles go off and blow up. But that's home brewing. And yeah, it was a pain in the ass to wash beer off the ceiling. Inside, I was smiling because it just, you know, it's happiness. Because it's part of brewing beer. And I know that the guys at Goose Island, years ago, when they first started as homebrewers, years ago, they had experiences like this, and they look back on them fondly. And the day comes when Goose Island, a brewery in Chicago, who's very well known and makes some very good beer, Goose Island finally gets a company like Anheuser-Busch, who so badly wants to be in the craft beer market, but can't do it with their beer, Budweiser, that they buy up a brewery like, you know, Goose Island. And I felt happy, for the business side of Goose Island. Maybe not so much the craft brewer side, but the business side. Because I see it, man. Listen, every one of these guys who are going off saying how they sold out, how, you know, they're not really a craft brewer if they're selling Anheuser-Busch. It's no longer, Goose Island is no longer craft beer because, you know, AB owns it now. That's, you couldn't be further from the truth. As a business, it's fantastic. And it's a good move, and they can move on and do something else. I don't know what's in the contract. Maybe they can never brew beer professionally again because they sold, you know, their rights to do so. Who knows what the details were. But they moved on to do something else, and they sold it to a company that would buy it. Who the hell else was going to buy Goose Island? Who's got that kind of money? I think the fact that Anheuser-Busch put their money on the table for this is, it says a lot more about craft beer than we can say. And listen, they don't owe us shit. They don't owe us an excuse, an apology. They don't owe us any reasons why they did it. If you don't like it, don't buy their beer. If Anheuser-Busch is so evil, don't buy Goose Island beer from now on. There's plenty of it out there. You can buy something else. But it's got me thinking. If Goose Island's worth $38 million, what kind of a price tag does Stone have on its head? Well, for that matter, Pizza Port, who just won the whole freaking thing at Great American Beer Festival last year. I just don't understand why craft beer nerds like us, and I'm one of them, why we have to be so damned holier than thou all the time. Could we stop being assholes for 1 second and just give Goose Island an applause? I mean, give them a standing ovation for making it that far. I mean, aren't you kind of proud that a craft brewery did something like that? And I understand you don't like Anheuser-Busch. And listen, I don't like them either. I don't like their beer. I don't like their politics. But That was an affirmation that craft beer is dangerous to macro breweries. That's what that was. That was a political move. And now I got to wonder, and I know Stone, their morals are a little too stiff for that stuff. They're not going to go for it. I think if Anheuser-Busch offered them $300 million, they might have to think about it, but I doubt they'd even do it then. Greg Cook, I don't think so. The guy's a punk, and he doesn't buy into Anheuser-Busch's shit, you know? So good for him. But listen, you know, we got to take it easy here, man. They don't owe us anything. Why? Because we've been campaigning for craft beer all this time? What? They didn't ask us to do that. We do it because we love craft beer. What, all of a sudden we've got to hate some breweries now because they did something stupid? You might find it stupid, but let me tell you something. If Anheuser-Busch came to your door and offered you $38 million for your car or something that, you know, you had that you had made or something, anything, you trying to tell me you wouldn't take that money? Bullshit. You take that money, you say thank you, you'd even kiss their ass. I'll just tell you this, $38 million buys a ton of mouthwash.
You ever been around an Italian where if you go to an Italian restaurant, they can't say, like, you know, mozzarella. It's, you know, mozzarella. I'm like, oh, give me a break.
A little bit of rigotte.
Rigotte.
What?
Oh, come on.
I was with somebody at an Italian restaurant once who was ordering the veal parmigiana. And the parmigiana, and the waiter goes, "You mean the veal parmesan?" Sure.
Do you guys do the thing? Do you guys do the thing where you go to a restaurant, if you can't pronounce it, you point and yes, and point like a dog at the waiter?
Yeah,
it's embarrassing.
P E S C E. How do you pronounce that?
Pesh.
That's fish.
Zuppa de pesh.
Zuppa de pesh. Zuppa de pesh.
Pechy.
Here's one of my favorites. So I go to an Italian restaurant in the city with my family. And my wife always has to drag out the words. I'm like, oh, here we go. And my kids cringe. And my wife goes, so where are you from in Italy? And the guy goes, I am from Cuba. Oh, we died. We went, yes, take that.
Yeah, they're right, though. I mean, don't you hate that? When someone does that, they you know, they try to act like they speak Italian or French. You know, the few times I've tried to do that, I felt so stupid. There's a guy, you know, I'm trying to say the word and I can't say it. Man, I'm not, you know, I can't speak that language. And the guy goes, you know, you want number 27, right? Yeah, number 27. Thanks. It happens in, I go to Fa all the time and I can't pronounce this stuff, man. I mean, it's not pronounced like it looks either. So it's not like Italian or French. So now I order the number one. Because it's easier. Dan Patrick. I love when they talk about food on that show. It's just so funny. Here's another thing I want to play for you. Man, locavores. Jesus. That is a word for... You know what? They may as well just put... This is what we need to do. We'll update the thesaurus, okay? And if you need a word for insufferable pain in the ass, just say locavore. A locavore, for any of you who don't know, is somebody who will only eat things that were grown within a certain distance of their house. So, say, you know, 50 miles or 100 miles. Now, my friend Charles is not a locavore, but his goal is to try to eat as close to home as possible because, you know, personally, he does not want his food to carry a large global carbon footprint. Okay, respectable. That's not really a locavore, because a locavore will walk into a restaurant and ask, you know, where's the chicken grown? And the guy goes, oh, no, the chicken's from Iowa. Well, f*** you, and he walks out. That's a locavore. He says that to Charles. First of all, Charles is not going to ask unless they tell him. And if the chicken was grown in Iowa, Charles would say, pass the salt. But listen, if it was grown or raised, you know, down the street, well, then that's a little bit more, it makes him feel better. That's the difference. So listen to this. This is a skit on locavores, just how stupid it is and how stupid they can be. It stars Fred Armisen from Saturday Night Live. And it's really funny because there are people like this. And this takes it to, you know, as far as you can get. But it is pretty funny.
Hey, guys. Hello.
Hi, hello.
My name is Dana. I'll be taking care of you today. If you have any questions about the menu, please
let me know.
I guess I do have a question about the chicken, if you could just tell us a little bit more about it.
The chicken is a heritage breed, woodland-raised chicken that's been fed a diet of sheep's milk, soy, and hazelnuts.
Okay, this is local?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm going to ask you just one more time, and it's local?
It is.
Is that USDA organic or Oregon organic or Portland organic?
It's just all across the board, organic.
The hazelnuts, these are local?
How big is the area where the chickens are able to roam free?
I'm sorry to interrupt. I have exactly the same question.
4 acres. Mm-hmm. Give me just a second. I'll be right back, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Great. She's nice.
Well, you're doing the right thing.
I'm too apologetic.
You are.
I drove way too slow here today, didn't I?
Yeah.
I am so weird with that gas pedal. That thing just moves the whole vehicle forward now.
All right. So here is the chicken you'll be enjoying tonight.
You have this information. This is fantastic.
Absolutely. His name was Colin. Here are his papers, okay?
That's great. He looks like a happy little guy who runs around. A lot of friends, other chickens as friends. Putting his little wing around another one and kind of like, you know, palling around.
I don't know that I can speak to that level of intimate knowledge about him. They do a lot to make sure that their chickens are very happy.
When you say they, I mean, who are these people raising Colin?
It's a farm that's located about 30 miles south of Portland.
And you have a good relationship with this farm?
We do.
But it's not some guy on a yacht who lives in Miami who's
goodness,
just
no.
saying that he's organic.
It tears at the core of my being the idea of someone just cashing in on a trend like organic.
No, I know the type, no.
Yeah.
Tell you what, we're going to go check it out if you don't mind. Just if you could hold our seats.
Oh, now?
Yeah. We'll be right back.
We'll
just want to make sure.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dana.
Sure.
His name was Colin. His name was Colin, and you're a Colin. How's that? Yeah, listen, I don't know people like this, but Alice Waters, I could see her just being this crazy. Do you remember I played that intro for a show? It was a while back, and it was some big meeting or, you know, this big talk that had Anthony Bourdain, Alice Waters, and some other guys on the dais. And Alice Waters was saying, you can have a hot dog, but it must be a USDA, you know, organically raised a cow. So the beef must have been, you know, organic, you know, all this other stuff. And that if you're going to use a bun, it must be a whole wheat bun and all this other crap. And he's like, you know, bullshit.
The way that we choose, the choices that we make every day are really affecting the world. Mm-hmm. And they're affecting the environment, they're affecting our culture, and they're affecting our health. And they are the most serious decisions. And I want people to pay attention mm-hmm. to this. And so you can have the hot dog on the train, but you better ask them where they got their hot dog.
Yeah. I'm not sure they know the answer to that question.
And I want to know that it's a grass-fed. Mm-hmm. Beef, hot dog. Yeah. You know, that's what's important. Well, where did the bun come from? And where did the flour come from?
Is it a good hot dog? That's all I want
to know. No, I want to know.
I don't care if it... I mean, as somebody who for many years enjoyed cigarettes and drugs, clearly I'm willing to swap a certain amount. I don't think my personal health or the purity of my colon is that important compared to pleasure. I see chefs, I'm not your dietitian or your ethicist. I'm in the pleasure business. My responsibility is to give you the best tasting tomato, not the most cruelty-free tomato, not the most local tomato, not the most organic tomato. Just the one that, you know, my responsibility is to give you the most delicious tomato that I can afford, given the circumstances, and maybe increase the likelihood that you get laid after dinner.
Come on, man. I mean, you literally, I think people who are that crazy, they're taking the fun out of food. Stop eating. Food is not for you. Seriously. I mean, you're taking it too seriously and too literally. We have bigger problems in the world. You're talking about eating an organic hot dog. It's a freaking hot dog. You know what's in a hot dog? Lips and assholes. I could give a shit if, you know, the cow, you know, was organically raised. I'm eating its brain ground up into a hot dog. Who cares? Seriously. Get over yourselves. And here's the other thing is that, you know, this is what's really getting me. You know, I'm watching, you know, No Reservations and Andrew Zimmern's Bizarre Foods. Great shows, but lately it's bumming me out. Bourdain, first of all, in the first show he comes back for his new season, his first show he's in Haiti, okay? And you know anything about Haiti, they're very poor. The government is corrupt, like most governments in that area, corrupt. And the people basically are starving because they've got no money, no food. Bourdain's sitting here. I don't know why you would choose that as a travel destination. I don't know anybody stupid enough to say, where do you want to go on vacation? I want to go to Haiti. Really? Okay. I was thinking Hawaii or, I don't know, Bahamas. Haiti? Is there a resort in Haiti? I mean, literally, you go there and Bourdain's getting stared at. Like, these guys are staring at him like they're going to kill him. And that, to me, that's not a travel destination. I'm staying home. Listen, I watched his show on Haiti at home and didn't feel safe. I'm locking my doors. It's bad, man. It is bad down there. So he's sitting there, right? And he's like, hey, how come I'm the only one eating? They're at this, you know, this food stand. This woman's got this cart full of food. The guy says, well, no one can afford to eat. They can't afford, you know, to buy her food. And so all these kids are standing around. You've seen this before in his shows. These kids are standing around staring at him. He goes, I'm done eating. Can I buy the rest of her food so she can make money and we'll pay for it and then these kids can eat? And the guy says, yeah, sure, of course. So Bourdain says, listen, whatever you have left, let us pay for it and then you can feed these people. And the woman goes, oh, thanks. Well, she's happy because she gets to make money that day. And the kids are happy because they get to eat. God only knows how long it's been for them. So immediately they start lining up to buy the food or to pick up the food. And the woman's, you know, making dishes. And within 5 minutes, these gangs show up. These Haitian gangs, and start taking the food away from people and hitting them with bats and saying, get away from the food. And Bourdain feels like a sap because he tried to help them, and these gangs come in. I don't know, do you ever remember watching this movie Black Hawk Down, 2001? There's this movie Black Hawk Down about this situation in Mogadishu, Somalia, 1993. This Black Hawk helicopter was shot down, and the pilot was held hostage by Farhan Adid's military gang. There was like a militia. Well, these militias work the same way. You know, when they, at the time in 93, the UN, we were on a UN peacekeeping mission, we were dropping food for these Somalians to eat. So they're dropping bags of rice. It's the opening scene of the movie. They're dropping bags of rice for, you know, to help these people out, to keep them from starving. Within 5 minutes, these militants, the guys show up in these jeeps and start spraying the place with bullets. And people are just getting hacked down. And the guy says, this food is the property of Farhan Adid. You do not have any rights to it. So he's starving them out. And that's what's going on down in Haiti. So here he is watching these kids go from being elated because they get to eat to being bummed out again because, you know, once more, a meal was just kind of swept away. And Bourdain went about his business. He had a whole show to do. Why? I have no idea. And I don't even know what happened after that because I turned it off. My stomach was upside down. So fast forward to his show in Nicaragua, when after eating a meal and doing a couple food scenes, they come upon a giant dump. Not like, you know, like a dog just made a poop. A dump, a real dump. Like, you know, a trash dump. And there's thousands of people weeding through the trash, picking trash for either things that they can use to live with or things that they can sell. Or what's even more heartbreaking, food, because they can't afford to eat, and they're picking through trash for their food, and they're eating it. So here's Bourdain realizing what the situation is. Listen.
For your average hardworking Managuan living comfortably or close to comfortably or even just above the poverty line, this would be a good, nutritious, and affordable meal. This, on the other hand, is how some other people live. It's called La Chureca. La Chureca is a slang term for dump. This, just outside the capital, is home for well over 300 families, known as churaqueros, some of them third-generation trash pickers.
Not exactly, you know, appropriate to move over to front line all of a sudden, but on the other hand, seeing this, I don't. Just not feeling so good about doing another scene where I shove food in my face.
And at one point, he looks and he sees these kids and he goes, dude, I've got a daughter that age. This sucks, he says. This is fucked up. That's what he said. This is really, really messed up. So, of course, then they, you know, the next scene after this is Bourdain talking to himself, I guess, having drinks, saying, man, I don't think I can go on doing this show, you know, doing another food scene after what we saw today, that maybe it's given us a little perspective.
Frankly, I'm bummed right the fuck out. Kind of heartbroken. The scene we shot at the dump, I have a really hard time dealing with it. I got a daughter that age, you know, some of those kids. But one of those guys raking the garbage, you know, if they watched this show, what would they think? Who is this twisted fuck traveling around the world shoving food in his face? You know, what the fuck, man? I have to blame, you know, Reagan, the World Bank, the IMF. You know what? That's not it. That's bullshit. Not even looking at France. Just saying, how do I go home and sleep at night after this? How do I continue? I just feel like I'm angry. I'm angry and I'm discouraged and I'm just, there's just no processing this, you know?
So you're thinking, wow, hey, man, Bourdain, sheesh. Guy's got a conscience. It's the kinder, gentler Bourdain. So what's he going to do with this, the rest of this episode in Nicaragua?
Oh, that's good. I was told soup. This is not soup. I'm loving it, but I mean, I could feed 10 people out of this thing, man.
My sister could eat two of these bowls of mondongo.
No way.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that.
Oh, well. Oh, boy. Yeah, that's it. Sucks, man. My question is, who the hell wants to go to Nicaragua after seeing that shit? Seriously. I mean, who? Really? Travel destination? Let's see here. You know, the thing is this. I say, look, when he does these shows in Asia, and by Asia, I'm talking Vietnam, Japan, China, okay, or he goes to Europe, goes to France, Paris, Germany, Poland, and you want to go to those places because it looks good, the people are friendly, but then he goes to places like, you know, I don't know, Madagascar or Somalia or Ethiopia, and all of a sudden we're seeing starving kids with, you know, inflated bellies because they haven't eaten in weeks and flies flying up their nose and they're starving. It's like, oh boy, what the hell's going on, man? World vision, dude. But what can we do? Seriously, the governments are corrupt. We can't do much. I'll tell you what you can do. Not go, okay? Stay the hell out of there. Don't do a travel show on it. We know the situation's bad. Why are you bumming me out? Andrew Zimmern did it as well. And listen, don't put words in my mouth here, okay? I love Andrew Zimmern. I think the dude is cool. He's funny. His show is great. And he speaks the truth. Look, if something is weird or tastes like, you know, crap, he'll tell you. And don't say that that's being mean because, listen, he'll admit, okay, I see the hard work that goes into this. I respect the tradition. But this food is a little weird. I mean, okay, look, we'll give you that it's traditional, that it took a lot of work, that to you, it's probably very good. But you have to admit that if you take a whitefish, bury it in salt in a can, and leave it on the sun for 30 days, then come back and pick it up. 30 days, I mean 3 years. Come back, and it smells like somebody died. And then you eat it, and you go, that is the funkiest, nastiest thing I've ever had in my mouth. Don't you tell me that, you know, we're being mean. Because that's the fact. Otherwise, you wouldn't have given it to him. He probably asked for the weirdest thing that you had. But what happened on his show, and I'm trying to think where he was. It was somewhere in Africa. He's sitting at a table, and this guy's bringing out all the food that they have. And you've seen this before, man. You know, these kids always rally around, whether it's in Asia or wherever. Even on Zane Lamprey's show, he did some show up in Thailand or something, and there were kids all around watching him eat or drink or whatever he was doing. The people, they just love to assemble and stare. But these kids are staring at Andrew in front of this big table of food as he's stuffing his face, and they're staring in a different way. That stare was a hungry stare. And I think Zimmern knew it, because Zimmern says, when he's done, he goes, I'm full, but we have all this food left over. Can the kids have it? And the guy says, of course, yeah, you paid for it. So he lets the kids have it, and they dig in, and they ate with two hands. They couldn't get enough food in their mouths. They were starving. And I got bummed out again and turned it off. I came downstairs, and Katrina says, "What's wrong?" And I told her. I said, "We got to stop this." Charles at 100 miles said, "It's food tourism. That's what this is." And I thought, you're right. Look at us as a nation. We've got plenty of food. Molecular gastronomy. I'm playing with food. The girl, Marin, who's doing the documentary, sent me an email, asked me if I thought that modern cuisine had a positive effect on the global food supply. Were there things that we could make that would help the global food supply? And I said, no. In fact, just the opposite. You know, if she mentioned carrot pasta. You know, you make the gel with agar-agar. And I said, in order to make carrot pasta or any gel or anything, using carrot as an example, I've got to have at least 8 ounces of carrot juice. In order to get 8 ounces of carrot juice, I've got to juice about a pound of carrots. Now, if I asked you to drink 8 ounces of carrot juice, wouldn't be an issue, right? That's just a cup. What if I asked you to eat a pound of carrots? Now what? Can you do it? I can't. A pound of carrots? I could eat a pound of beef, but a pound of carrots? I don't know, man. That's a lot of carrots. How many of those kids you think we'd feed with a pound of carrots? And here I am juicing them so I can make some fancy pasta that really is not even going to fill your belly. So yeah, we're pretty opulent here, man. We play with food. We have a good time. It's entertainment. We eat expensive things. But we just have to remember that there are people out there less fortunate than we are. And I think it's kind of shitty that we wave it in people's faces how opulent we are. Now, people in Japan are living on a bowl of rice and a cup of soup a day. And we're bitching that, oh, there goes sushi. Okay. But on the other end of the spectrum, as foodies, we have really kind of gotten a little crazy in that regard. Because Zimmern's at this place. He's in Chicago. And he's at this place called Motto, where this guy is taking, you know, let's say he uses a couple pigs. And he's got to butcher these pigs after they're delivered from the farm that they come from. So he's going to butcher these pigs so he can get them ready to, you know, make food with them. And he uses everything. He uses, you know, nose to tail. So the guy uses everything at his restaurant. Except when he butchers these pigs, he's got clients or, you know, clientele that want to watch him butcher the pigs. So he charges admission. And the people standing there, like a bunch of goofs, act so interested in literally watching every step as he's cutting down this pig. They're taking pictures with their cell phones. I don't buy it. They're feigning interest. And this one guy's a super pain in the ass. His wife bought it for him as a anniversary present. You know, bought him a ticket so he can sit and watch this guy cut down a pig. Listen to this.
When I start cutting and you see me holding my knife like a serial killer, this is actually proper butchering technique.
Rob Levitt is the chef and owner of Motto. Every week, Rob buys and butchers a pig or two. For about a year now, he's been selling front row seats for people who want to see how it's done. Tickets are $50 each. So far, it's a sellout crowd every time.
Why are you here?
I think butchering's fascinating.
Right.
My wife got this as an anniversary present for me.
I've had servers almost quit because of this sound. I need a new saw blade.
Mom?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this year for my birthday, I got a butchering knife and a set of larding and darning needles.
You're very sick.
My wife got this as an anniversary present for me because I think it's fascinating. Douchebag. Ugh. You know, I'm taking his man card. If that dude has friends, take his man card. What the hell's going on? What are you doing? $50? And she's sitting with him. That's $100. Dude, you could eat dinner at his restaurant for $100. You sit and watch the guy do something he was going to do anyway? Literally. Why do you want to watch that? Do you honestly think that you're going to buy a pig, take it home, and butcher it like that? Not a chance. Not a chance. But we pretend that we can. And I guess that's enough. Who am I to say? You know, you want to do it, do it. Go ahead. I personally think you're a douchebag. And that's my opinion. All right, well, listen. That's all I've got. I'm sorry if this is a downer of a show. I'm sorry. But craft beer nerds, food nerds, foodies, take a break, will you? I mean, seriously, let's back off a little bit and not be so crazy. Sorry for the language. If I pissed y'all off, that's fine. Comment if you like. Don't comment if you don't. Stop listening if it's a big deal. But I just I had to unload on the things that were on my mind. And I hope that we as a people can find it within ourselves to help the people of Japan and the rest of the world as much as we can and stop dropping bombs. Drop food, not bombs. But drop F-bombs. You can even drop the F-bombs while you're dropping food. So here's your fucking rice. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks to Travel Channel for the audio. Thanks to the Dan Patrick Show. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter, My Life is a Foodie. And you can also join the My Life is a Foodie Facebook group. You can find links to all this stuff on our website, mylifeisafoodie.com. Until next time, my name is Phil, and this has been My Life as a Foodie.